Tenacious doesn't feature traditionally in the Tower of Snow White. You won't find his name mentioned at any point in the story. As a rule, he didn't participate in fairy tales, and on this he stood his ground. Of all the creatures in the woods, he loved Snow White the most, more than any prince ever could. But, as a rule, he didn't participate in love, and on this he stood his ground. And Snow White, she knew. The truth of the tale is she loved him too. She loved him to the core of his tough-skinned, apple-shaped heart. She loved him till she could take it no more, and one day she ran away. They finally found her, laying by the riverside, with a watermark note from the tears she'd cried. Tenacious took the note and read, "Wake me with a kiss, apple of my eye, and we will live happily together till this river runs dry." Months went by. Tenacious as he was, never left her side, but tenacious as he was, never answered her cries. As always, he just stood his ground, till he began to take root, and eventually he turned into an apple tree. Then one sunny afternoon, a prince came along. He read the note. He kissed Snow White. Snow White, of course, awoke. And Snow White was, of course, surprised to see a prince looking down into her deep brown eyes. It was love at first sight. And so Tenacious watched on as the love of his life walked away towards the setting sun to live happily ever after with another someone.
Hello and welcome to episode 10. You were just listening to Donna Butlin performing Tenacious, the Eighth Dwarf. I like the story. It's like, you know, a bit of a twist. And this is what she said when I asked her to explain herself, I guess.
I started out doing poetry just as a normal poem, whatever normal would be, but then I wrote that poem as a story form, and I realised that I actually really enjoyed the fact that it was a story. There was something there that people could latch onto, and I mean, I've had it said before when I've read it that people identify with the moral in it and things, and that wasn't intentionally put in there, but it just developed as it went along, and that's what I think I enjoy about writing the stories, is that they sort of carry you along, and then you get this sort of moral from it, and something to take away with you at the end as well. And then I sort of wrote another poem and in a story form, and I realised that that's something that gives me a certain style that people can identify me with, and that's really hopefully what I'm trying to do with those stories.
Yeah, that's cool. So when you came up with that idea, where did the idea come from for that one, was it?
That came from I was reading a book of poetry by Margaret Atwood, and one of her poems, it had some kind of line, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it said dwarf tree, and that sort of gave me the idea for the dwarf turning into a tree, and I really don't know where the rest of the story came from, but it just sort of, it's one of those things, you start writing and it just flows, and it just sort of all came out, I suppose.
So what made you think, why did you write that as a poem and not just as a straight story, or did you consider each and just sort of go in one direction?
It just came out as a poem more than anything else. I just wrote it down and I looked at it back and realised actually this is a poem. And I mean, fairy tales do tend to have that kind of poetic sort of form about them anyway, so I think it was more chance than anything else that it did actually come out in a poem form.
Yeah, I remember when we met before, you mentioned that you used to do comedy, and then you sort of moved over to that from that to poetry.
Yeah,
which is an interesting direction. Yeah. So I was just wondering, how did that come about? Are there any sort of influences or?
Well, yeah, I mean, I started off doing the stand-up comedy, I looked into doing stand-up comedy, but never really found the kind of thing that I wanted to do. I knew that I wanted to do something creative, and I went into stand-up comedy because of going into comedy venues and it being there, and it's around you so much, stand-up comedy, and you don't really realise, I think. But that's where I started off, but couldn't find anything to actually do myself. And then I started to delve into it a bit deeper and found more creative comedians that are a bit more alternative. And eventually I came across a guy called Daniel Kitson, and he started off doing comedy and then moved into storytelling. And his storytelling is quite sort of spellbound. It's spellbinding. You know, you sit and listen to him and you actually get imagery from him talking. And I wanted to do that myself. And I realised then that it wasn't really comedy that I wanted to do. It was more having some kind of impact on an audience. And I realised that probably comedy wasn't going to be that kind of thing that I could do with that. So then I moved on to doing storytelling, and the poetry then went on from there.
Do you just kind of do you rehearse a lot beforehand, or do you just kind of go up there and just try it out on people?
Loads. I really do. I drive my parents crazy at home just repeating these poems over and over again. I think they know my poems word for word just because I repeat them so much. But I tend to record them like on my iPhone or whatever, and then I'll listen back to it, and then I'll sort of make sort of odd tweak changes. If I think something doesn't sound right, then I will sort of go back and edit it. But that I could do that sort of hundreds of times, yeah, and over and over and over again until I get to the point where I do really know my stuff off by heart, and then I know that I can take it up onto stage and do it. Yeah. I don't like seeing poets reading from books. I don't know if that's sort of something that's sort of, everyone's got their own sort of opinions on it, whether they, I know that my mum always says, why don't you stand there and hold your book and read from your book? But I think it detaches from the audience, and I think a big part of performing to an audience is eye contact and making people feel like you're talking to them rather than just reading something off of a piece of paper. So I do like to know things off by heart.
Yeah, no, it is really nice when they come up and they just sort of deliver it to you. But I think I just like if they're familiar with it. So I don't mind if they're holding a book, if they refer to it. I think what I don't like is when they've got their little published pamphlet and they just, I just happen to be reading from that today. It's like, I don't know, it's just, I don't know. Or they come with like a really awkward folder and then just watching them being awkward, and it's just...
Big Leverage files.
Yeah, and they're just balancing it really precariously. But other than that, I don't know, it's cool.
Yeah,
so my other question, or maybe my last question, was you mentioned Margaret Atwood earlier, who I think is amazing.
Amazing.
She knows what she's doing, I think.
Yeah.
What other kind of people influence you, or are you particularly sort of fond of?
Well, like I said, Daniel Kitson, Margaret Atwood. I like Laura Dockrell. I think she's great. And she was sort of one of the people that sort of I looked at her stuff and I thought it gave me confidence to do my stuff, because I was worried before sort of coming out onto the performance poetry sort of scene whether, you know, what I was doing was acceptable or was right. And sort of seeing her do her stuff, I just thought anything goes, you know. So her poetry is sort of so varied and stuff. She does stories, she does sort of other poems, and she does sort of characters and things. And I realised that, you know, you could really be experimental and do whatever you want. I also like Ross Sutherland. I think he's absolutely brilliant. I remember looking at YouTube, he did a Little Red Riding Hood thing where he took the certain words and did them sort of so many spaces down in the dictionary, and it just completely changed it, but it just gave it so much atmosphere. It was absolutely amazing.
before we leave you with Donna's last poem, just want to thank her for coming in and to let you know that submission deadline for the next issue is 27th of January, so 12 more days. Do send us something nice. And yeah, next week we've got a couple of poets coming in who will feature in the issue, so you kind of get to hear their poems as well as read them, which is always quite pretty. I think it's quite thrilling. That's all I need to tell you, I think. So yeah, I'm going to leave you with Donna and her last poem.
She stood up on the cliff top for the thousandth time, looking out across the sea. The wind cut through her cheeks like whips, her lips were icy blue. The sound ran round her ears so loud, she didn't hear him call, didn't hear him arrive at all. So he crept up closer, put his arms around her and his hands up over her eyes. And for the thousandth time, she smiled and placed her hands on his, peeled them from her eyes, and on each palm she placed a kiss. And they made their thousandth promise as they stood and held each other, to one day leave their cliff top and sail the sea together. But this would never happen. On night 1001, she walked up to the cliff top, but her love didn't come. She sat and watched the sunset, and then the stars appear. The moon rose and fell until the sun again was near. And in these early hours, she looked down towards the port and saw her love standing with a crew beside a boat. She watched on as he boarded, watched on as cargo was packed. She watched on as he set sail, never looking back. At sunrise, the horizon burst with an amber glow. She sat alone in silent wonder as amber turned to yellow, until suddenly she was immersed in a shadow. Slowly she looked up, and there, overhead, a ship drifted in the air and stopped above the cliff-top ledge. Sails made of ivory silk glistened in the sun. 100 cogs turned and clacked as gold propellers spun. The gangway lowered slowly to the ground. An old man emerged and walked on to the land. He took her hand and bowed, and then he motioned her on board. Dazzled and bewildered, she nodded and conformed. And as they sailed away, she told the man her story. He listened most intently and then in turn replied, "It wasn't meant to be, my dear, and I will tell you why. While he was looking out to sea, you always saw the sky."